Hello and welcome to the Ski Racing Podcast with me, Ed Drake. Just Ben and myself for now, as Marcel is far too busy doing real job stuff and is hopefully going to jump on in and join us a little bit later on. So Ben, just you and me, bad. Yet more disappointment on the men's side with no racing yet again. I was going to say we're going to do it the other way around, but actually let's just get this out of the way quickly. The men, more disappointment, gone all that way, flown all that way to do some powder skiing on some downhill skis.
Got two training runs in. That's a good start. It's more than we got at the other venue so far.
Do you think they should get like dish out half points or something? Just, I don't know, do something. Just give us something to talk about.
This could be the lowest points total overall of a men's World Cup ever to win.
Yeah, gone from record-breaking last season to record-breaking for the wrong reasons this year.
This rate, Matty Fella might win the overall with his 100 points he's got from the one male race that's been completed so far this season.
Did you see that? He's cruising around Instagram. Did you see it with the little picture of him celebrating as overall champion?
I mean, at least he's got a sense of humour. It is really frustrating. And obviously, there's nothing you can do about the weather. Talked a bunch of times about different things you could try, but you know, Beaver Creek's not one of those places we've had problems with before. Normally those races go off, you might have a shuffle of the days and bits and pieces, but we don't normally get tons of cancellations. But it does feel very unbalanced at the moment that we've had five women's races and only one completed men's race so far.
Now, didn't we say seven? It's seven, isn't it?
Oh yeah,
yeah, I think we had seven women's, one men's.
Yeah.
Go on.
It's just weird when you're looking at the standings that the men's is just that one set of results and that's it and nothing more. And it makes me a bit frustrated that they did take in the men's levy off of the calendar because it's somewhere that rarely gets cancellations.
Yeah.
But obviously, like we've talked about in the past, they obviously want to hold races in different locations, and maybe having both tours in the same stop at the same place isn't ideal. It's just a really weird set of circumstances we seem to be faced at the start of this season.
Yeah, total shame, real shame. But yeah, seeing some of the videos and stuff coming out of it, I think one of the training runs that the guys were told to do just in their like jackets and trousers and stuff. And I've seen a couple of the videos and it's like knee deep powder. Like, dude, like there's just no way that is, was going to happen. Real shame. But yeah, I mean, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Too much snow, not enough snow, too high winds, but outdoor sport, skiing. Yeah. It's just annoying, isn't it? Especially I think it's highlighted even more the fact that we went over there for three races. Over to North America from Europe and go back to Europe again, having only sort of one stop. I think it'd be a little bit easier if we were in Lake Louise, or if there was another stop for the men, for the women doing Killington and then going up to Tremblant. You're like, well, one of those gets cancelled, you might get lucky and get the other one off. Whereas obviously the men have gone all the way, Beaver Creek, no racing, turnaround, just racking up a few air miles and,
yeah, and we kind of called that out last week as well when we were talking to Mike Yannick as well about, you know, no longer having Lake Louise on the calendar and the problems with that. And also, yes, it costs a lot of money and it's sad for the resort not to be able to finance it. But yeah, it looks bad for the tour, especially as we've talked at length as well about all of the climate initiatives flying the tour to North America for no racing is not going to be a good look. Yes, you can't make the weather do anything, but if you were there for a month-long leg of the tour, you might not notice it as much, or you'd have as much chance to reschedule events as possible. But yeah, I just feel a bit bad for, I guess, some of those big speed guys that have been chomping at the bit to get going, and they've got nothing to show for all of their summer training.
Out of five, none. But then, some of the guys, I was talking to Blaise Giesendaner before the start of the season, and going into Zermatt, he'd done 3 days on his downhill skis because of bad weather that they'd had down in South America. So one of those where you're like, is what it is.
Not that we're any good at picks, but picking a men's speed race is going to be hilarious by the time we get round to a race, because mate, no one's going to have a clue. This form is going to be non-existent.
Absolutely. But anyway, onto something a little bit more positive. We did have some really good racing over in Tremblant in Quebec, Canada, and it was awesome. I mean, the hill maybe not as tricky as it could have been, but the artificial rollers that they put in, obviously they played a really cool feature to the track. And in terms of a race, certainly the first day, super exciting, down to the wire, toe-to-toe, multiple people in there with a shout. Great advertisement for ski racing, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Day one, Federica Briononi did the business and did it in some style as well, over Petra Vlahova and Michaela Shiffrin on the podium for the second time in succession in GS. Was it third time? No, she's been on the podium in all three, hasn't she now? Didn't she podium in Solden, as I madly looked through my notes? Anyway.
Hold, please.
Hold, please, caller. You can check that one. Has she been on the podium in every round so far? And then some really cool racing with the second day as well. But Ben, let's start off right at the beginning. Let's start off with day one. What did you make of it?
First thing, Shiffrin did not podium in Solden. That was a Gubaromi Brignoni Vlahova podium.
It was Shiffrin fourth. Tell me she was close. I just absolutely mugged myself right off it.
DNF. No, she was sixth.
Don't give me that. Where was she?
She was sixth.
That's close enough. That's two threes.
Basically two podiums in one.
That's how it works, when I was racing.
That's 104, yeah. How many podiums that?
Go on, you get. Go on.
Anyway, back to the racing for the weekend. Yeah, like you said, that first, I can't believe I even gave that speech at the end of the last podcast about how Brignoni's going to be my new Tessa. I'm going to pick her in all the races, but only pick her in the second race. I could have had an absolute bumper points weekend had it been both days. But it was brilliant racing. Like you said, the course, I like the kind of pitch at the top to give people a lot of speed. And then, yeah, like you said, they made the flats entertaining with the rollers just before the small pitch at the end. And I mean, we could probably get into it as well, but I think I quite enjoyed what the course setters did as well, in terms of they kind of picked sections to make interesting, rather than just it being, although the second run, I think, of brought it to light a lot on the first day. There was a gate quite early on after one of the rollers or fallaways that was just particularly wide, and a few of the early starters messed it up, and then other people had to like kind of backed off it for a bit, and then you know, when some of the faster people came in, they just said there's loads of space afterwards, we're just going to ride out the speed. But I like the fact that, okay, it's not necessarily the hardest hill like we discussed last week and saw over the weekend, but if you set well, you can make it interesting and not just, you know, the kind of Kostelic school of setting something crazy. But, you know, give people speed and see if they, you know, use it correctly in the right places. So yeah. I thought, of course, that was really good. The fog on the first day was a bit of a pain, obviously, for the early starters. It was quite bad. I think it cleared up a bit, but in comparison to the second day, the first day was absolutely fine. I really liked it. I was kind of hoping we'd get a bit of a show from the Canadians, from Grenier and Cassidy, but unfortunately, I mean, they skied fine, but I was just kind of hoping for a podium just to make everyone go full crazy in the stands.
I think I totally agree with you. The course setting, I had a couple of messages about the second run that was set by the Slovenian guy. I'm not going to try and pronounce his surname, because I think I made a bit of a meal of it when I was on air this time anyway. So I think I went for it once and then just called him the Slovenian after that. I thought he set a belter. I really enjoyed it. I mean, he had no skin in the game because no Slovenians had made the second run. And so he was just out there doing what he wanted. And I thought, yeah, he spiced it up. It was not mental, but it was challenging. It like made the racers think. It wasn't a case of just, you know, we talked about it a couple of times with them sort of doing away with the range finders and stuff and stopping the rhythmical nature of that course setting had become, and actually made the racers look ahead and use their, intuition and use their brain a little bit. So Yeah, I thought it was wicked. I thought it worked really well, and I thought it was mega. I think, yeah, I'm the same as you, Ben. From a Canadian perspective, Grenier, I think, just... I was going to say the occasion got the best of her, but I don't think that's quite fair. She just pushed too hard. She just tried too hard, and she wanted to put on a big performance. But that's sort of where she's at. We talked about it with Mike last week. That's how she... you know, that's how she's been going over the last two seasons-ish, and it's paid off a couple of times, one of which actually stood. But it paid off a couple of times, but she's just not got that consistency yet. And I think the speed's there, and it'll just be a case of, keep trucking, keep going, and see how that she'll eventually get to grips with how she skis and how that actually translates to the pressure and the hills on World Cup. And I thought actually Richardson and Cassidy Gray skied really well. Britt Richardson, actually, to be fair, both of them, I really like the way they ski, nice and aggressive, and some really, really quick skiing in there. So I thought the pair of them obviously getting dragged along a little bit by Grenier in training, obviously, and I think it's paying dividend. I think they're doing mega stuff. Gotcha.
As well, yeah. I was gonna touch on Gotcha. I was like, wait, imagine how much fun we could have had for the last like 10 years if she'd been racing all these GSs along the way. We could have had some absolute brilliant highlights, because as we know, she's already excited. But I thought with the conditions as they were, it wouldn't necessarily suit her, because some of the racers who are a bit more aggressive were struggling a bit, because in that flatter light, it's a lot harder to be as aggressive as you normally are. So the likes of Brignone, who, you know, you can see they ski with a lot of touch and feel, you think would be a little bit more comfortable in the flat light conditions. But I guess she's got the feel from downhill. Although she's an incredibly aggressive skier, you have to have that feel for what's happening under your feet in the speed events to make sure your skis are as flat as possible when you're gliding and those kinds of things. So, I probably shouldn't have been as surprised as I was to see her do this. And, you know, we've started off the season and she's raced all the GSs so far. It's now going to be a case of when we get into the speed bit of the season, if we get one, is she still going to continue to do the GSs? Is this her attempt at the overall by just getting top tens and
yeah? Well, she's seventh and tenth in those two GSs. I think she'd be mad not to, just because she's obviously skiing well, and those are from higher bib numbers as well. So all of a sudden she starts dropping bib numbers, and WCSL maybe gets in that in the 8 to 15, and she could be a real player. And obviously time. If she has the form that she had in downhill and Super G last season, which she basically, you know, nobody could get anywhere close. She was picking up 100 points for fun throughout all the speed races. And then she's picking up, you know, 30, 40, 50 points in, not quite 50, but, you know, big points relatively in GS. All of a sudden, Shiffrin might not have this all her own way in terms of the overall. And it's not just going to be a case of, you know, Shiffrin or Vlahova, like the chat's been around for a little while. It's going to be, you know, Shiffrin or Gogia. And you'd have to say, Gogia's got a real shot. I think she's got a real shot. Shiffrin might not have the ability to be as picky with the calendar that she's been over the last couple of seasons if she wants to still focus on the overall. I mean, she's won everything. Maybe she'll be like, whatever. But if she wants the overall, and that's a real... You know, she might not have the luxury of picking and choosing as much as she has over the last couple of seasons.
And as well, if you've got Vlahova back to some kind of form, it's then going to mean... People are taking points off her in the tech as well, yes. And that's you know, pretty... not scary, but exciting. I think probably not scary for Shiffrin. She probably enjoys the challenge and should do, because, you know... As much as we appreciate her skiing, it's boring when she wins by miles all the time. So it's great to see the possibility of that challenge there. Obviously, it's a very long way to go in the season. But I think Shiffrin, certainly on the second run, she looked very much like her old self in GS. I think we've said a few times, it looked like she's still searching for something in GS. The way her Vlahova and Brignone all skied on that second run was really great to see, because Shiffrin put one of those runs down where she took the lead by a fair bit and everyone went, ooh, is she going to do a Shiffrin again? And has she just, you know, wiped the floor with everyone? And then again, Vlahova, it must be enjoying this at the moment, rising to that challenge. And I think she made a couple of mistakes and cost herself a bit of time and still took the lead. And then Brignone, obviously having a bit of a margin to play with, just skied her normal way. And I really enjoyed that second round. Those three really put on a bit of a clinic.
Yeah, proper masterclass, wasn't it? Yeah, I think when you beat Shiffrin, you know, Shiffrin, like you say, put down a really good run, and then Vlahova comes down and sees that she's pipped her by like 800s and is like, man, yeah, got the better of Shiffrin. And obviously, when you get the better of Shiffrin, that usually means you're on the top step of the podium. And Brignone was like, nah, nah, nah. Not this time. And absolutely just, I thought Brignone was next level. I think the first run, the fluidity, the feel, I think all of that sort of supple and sort of clean movements. The second run, that was replaced with brute force and just dogged determination. She didn't want what happened in Solden, where she'd led and then not won, to happen again. And I think you could see that. And the interview that she gave after, she said that she felt that she made a mistake and really charged to sort of realize that she'd made an error and then made that adjustment. And that's what champs do. That's what the real talent has, that real awareness of what's happening underneath their feet and is able to make those changes. So I thought that was exceptionally good. Sarah Hector, a bit unlucky in fourth, but still not got that Olympic standard or the Olympic season where she was just smashing everything in the year before as well. Still trying so hard. You can almost see it. You can hear it because she screams out on the way down, just pushing, pushing, pushing. But I think we talked about Brignone skiing with so much feeling and fluidity, whereas Sarah Hector skis, not to be disrespectful, but from the outside looking in, doesn't look like she skis with feeling at all. It's just about charging. It's just about force and power rather than sort of any sort of subtlety. Again, that's just external. Who knows?
Would you say the same for Robinson as well, though?
Because yes,
she struggled 100%. On that first day. Obviously, she had made a mistake on the second day, but she didn't look. Bear in mind, we saw her back to podium ways the week before. She started to look again like everything's just, I'm going to get as much edge angle as I can and as much power down as I can. And in that softer snow and flat light, it's just hard to do. And obviously there is far more to both of their skiing than that. But
no, I think you're right, though.
There's more to it than just that. But when you have someone like Brignone and like, a bit like we said with Godji, you can almost see them sensing what's going on under their feet and you don't have the huge mistakes.
Yeah, I think the you're right with Killington. I mean, Killington was bulletproof icy and not that flat. I mean, it's got flat sections, but it's not a flat run. Whereas I think those two and others are skiing with brute force, and you can do that on the top section-ish, but it was soft, so you couldn't really, but you can kind of hide behind that on the steep. So you cannot hide with brute force on the flats. And I think they came unstuck really, which is a shame. And I think Robinson, to try and push on and use the result that she had previously to really kickstart her season, career, whatever, you know, without going too crazy, but kickstart herself again, you know, would have been praying for some really tough conditions, because that's when she's at her best, because the angles that she gets, a bit like Hector, you know, like you say, just the angles and stuff that she gets into, like, just needs something a little bit more difficult rather than maybe a more tactical course, which I think that was with all the terrain.
Yeah, it was. And like we said, that start of that second run with the kind of gate on the fall away, some people just went straight over the ridge and it was almost like they hadn't seen the gate was there in inspection. They were like, oh, yeah. I've slid 10 metres past this gate. I should probably get on the edges. But again, I think we've talked about this before. It's quite fun when the first couple of people ski out of a second run, because you can almost see
everyone's
thought process
nerves
going through everyone else. You're like, okay, well, did we not see that properly, or have they just skied it badly, or now what? And it's you know, and that's why it's such a kind of mental sport to have your head in the right place at all times? Do you ignore what you're seeing on the monitor and say, no, I've done my inspection, I know exactly what I'm looking for? And then if the coaches start radioing up and say, actually, yeah, the, you're carrying a bit more speed into there than we thought we were going to.
Brings up a good point, though. I mean, what do you think about the monitors? We know that they've been around for a while. Having heard what you just said about, you know, everybody else getting to look and watch. I know that's you can look with your eyes. You don't have to look with on the TV screen anyway. And they would have been able to see probably that and listen to the coaches. I don't know. I kind of like maybe be better without the televisions at the top and rely on the inspections and the skill from your inspection and the skill from your coaches and the skill from you interpreting what your coaches have said. I don't know. I kind of like the idea
you've got the coaches on the course radioing up and saying what they're seeing. That's fine.
Scrap the televisions at the top.
Can you imagine trying to get the phones out of people's hands? Yeah.
I was going to say, you'd have to take their phones away. Yeah, it's not quite as easy as that. But I think, I don't know.
That's the racing that I guess we're used to. Certainly at the lower levels I was racing at, and probably before you got onto the World Cup tour, you have your inspection, you've got a coach on the course saying, yeah, it's fine, and you've got your teammate saying, yeah, there's only a few holes on the way down. I'm sure you'll be fine.
Yeah, it's not that bad.
it would, but then, you know, if that is the case, I don't know. There's already enough arguments about technology and sport at the best of times. So whether or not you take away the monitors from skiing or not would matter. But I think it would make the racing more interesting. Like you said, when you do your inspection, you have to trust what you've seen and what you've calculated with your coaches and your teammates.
Yeah, it's part of your skill, isn't it? It's part of your part of the craft. But yeah. So anyway, hashtag cancel monitors and ban all tech. Ban it all. Let's go on to the second day, unless you've got anything to add on the first.
I mean, we don't have our token Austrian, so we can't go to bash the Austrians' corner, but let's save that
just in case he comes on by the time we finish this. Second day, Brinoni really did put on a masterclass on that second run. Conditions, yes, played their part, but she really did own that second run. Lara Gutbarami in second, Michaela Schifrin in third again. Clara Durez of the French team went from 13th to 4th, and that was pretty, pretty impressive. Vlahova went from 1st to 5th, Grenier 6th, Lucic in 7th, another fantastic day for her. Marta Bassino still unable to find any sort of consistency, shows glimpses of the speed that took her that title a few seasons ago, but nowhere near that at the moment. AJ Hurt, shout out to her. What a cracking second run she had in 9th. And Godja in 10th. Just quickly on the Godja thing, she's only 110 or so points behind Michaela Schifrin in GS standings. So that shows you how consistent she's been so far this season. But yeah, race two, what did you make of it, Ben? Do you want to start with the weather or... You go. Do what you want.
The weather was gross on the second run. So at the time, when the first run was on, I was like, okay, well, it's breezy on the second day, but at least they can see where they're going, which they couldn't on the first run on Saturday. But then when they turned the TV on for the second run, it just looked like a different resort.
Yeah.
It looked like they were back in Seldon or somewhere that's known for the really strong winds. You had the... You know, the panels occasionally almost blowing into the racer's way when they were trying to go past them, snow blowing up and down and across the hill. And then the fog coming in as well, that meant, you know, some of the top section, you could barely pick out the racer on the telly. And obviously we know it's worse on a TV screen than it is for the actual person skiing down. But it's still really difficult, especially when you're trying to go as fast as you can and you can't quite pick out the floor and the grooves in the floor. And having put all the undulations in, it then made it harder for people to see where they were because they couldn't see where they were going. So it was really tough conditions. And some people did get, you know, a very bad side of the wind. And you could see there were some people that skied absolutely fine, but just had no speed. And that might have played a big part in it. And I don't know if Durez got lucky with the wind or not, but you really don't want to take anything away from people when they've had great runs and, you know, possibly the best result of their career. So
yeah, I think she deserved it. Yeah, she was the best result of her career. And she, you know, she beat all the people either side of her at the same time. And so I think you can't take that away from her at all. I think that was mega.
Strangely, with her, and I don't know when they update the start list, but she started 42 on Saturday, but then was like 29,
WCSL, they changed. WCSL changes instantly.
I was going to say, I was looking at the full results and trying to work out what, because she'd had a good first day, but not a
number. The first day, I think she was 12th, maybe.
10th.
There you go. Yeah, so she'd
from 42.
Yeah, so that obviously gave her enough points to give herself up into that top 30. So yeah, started 29. So just snuck in the WCSL and obviously went off that rather than off Fizz points, because if a couple of less World Cup points and she would have been outside the 30, which means she would have started again at 42, not 31, because obviously it's done a different point scoring system. But I just loved the way that that result that she had on the first day just gave her the confidence to absolutely charge and fully commit to that race. And yes, earlier on in that run, it was better than it was at the end. The last three definitely had the worst conditions by a considerable margin. But Shiffrin, who was second after the first run, still finished third. And Lara Goop Brahmi, who was third after the first run, finished second. So the stuff that Vlahova was talking about. And yes, I can relate. And I think I'm just going to read her post for those of you that haven't seen it. She says, today the first run went great and I was hoping to showcase a similar performance on the second. I did my best. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough for the podium today, as I do believe the conditions weren't equal today for all the races. Visibility during the second run for the last race was close to zero and dangerous. I believe if such conditions would have been on the first run, we wouldn't have even started. Those who follow my career know that I never do such a public statement, and that throughout my career, I've always respected the other athletes, and I want to congratulate the other girls from today as they showed great performance, and also it's not up to us whether we race or not.
If you don't want to start, don't start.
I know, but
It's an interesting one because Brignone went however many only a few minutes of real time before her and set the fastest second run, so it wasn't like it was getting progressively worse and worse and worse. It was one of those ones where it would sweep in for a few minutes and then ease off for a little bit, which again makes it hard to say what's fair and what's not in ski racing. But unfortunately we're in a sport that has runs of over a minute long. Jokingly said to someone earlier, they could make it like ski jumping and have the wind meter, and then you get a points calculation based on how strong the wind is when you take off. But realistically, it could be really strong when you push out of the start gate and then stop immediately. It's not a sport where you can, make adjustments for bad weather. And like we saw with Goop Brahmi and Shiffrin, Vlahova was 23rd fastish, Shiffrin 18th and Goop Brahmi 12th. So clearly the conditions weren't great, because we know those three women, when conditions are even vaguely normal, they'll be in the top five of the second run unless they have a massive mistake. So yes, it made a difference and it may have cost Vlahova a podium. But at the same time, you've got to ski in it. If you don't want to race, don't race. And once the weather's there, and she might be right in terms of if it had been like that on the first run, they might not have started. But once the race is on, it's kind of on, and the people organising it are just trying to get the race finished, and it's up to the people managing the race to say whether they think it's safe or not for the athletes.
Yeah, I mean, we saw a bit similar conditions, didn't we, with Solden for the men, where they cancelled it after, 40 odd people or whatever it was. But that was on the first run. Again, second run, and when Brignone went down and she was sixth after the first run, it was fine. Shiffrin and Vlahova and obviously, and to a certain extent, Gut Bahrami wasn't great, but the rest of it was good. And to be honest, yes, they definitely had the worst conditions, but they normally get the best conditions. And as a guy who started his fair share of World Cup races towards the back, I think...
Oh, poor you, starting World Cup races.
Yeah.
Remember exactly. You're talking to. We haven't got Marcel and Mike on this week. It's just me. Yeah, just someone who never got to start a World Cup race. So we're very privileged, Edward.
Yeah, but for us that started back there, like, the race is normally unfair when you're starting late on. It just welcome to the world of not being the best in the world. So yeah,
you get thrown out after 20 seconds of the person in front of you.
Yeah.
It's like a rapid fire and chase them down and don't
so,
crash.
Yes, I get what she's saying. And I do say she's got a point. She was leading and she was skiing very well in the first run. She didn't have I can't think of the right words. Schifrin charged harder than Vlahova on the second run and risked more than Vlahova did on the second run. So whether that is Vlahova sort of self-preservation or whether she was thinking that she was trying as hard and just couldn't connect with the skis when it's that the conditions are that bad, then who knows? But that's racing. You're outside. And she says it's unsafe. And I think that we didn't see any injuries the whole weekend. So, and the conditions were crap for a lot of it. So,
yeah, you probably would have heard us whinging by now if we thought it wasn't safe for people to be racing it. Because I know we've definitely had podcasts where all we've talked about is how ridiculous it was that a race was even held rather than this one, which was just like these conditions weren't great. Some people did get a rough draw of it, but it wasn't a case of this is too dangerous to ski in. I do think certainly with GS and obviously any gate where they have panels, but when you can see the panels, when they start blowing into the racer's way and it's gusty and you know, you don't want to get impaled by a GS panel because the wind gusts just as you get to it, that would be unsafe. But I didn't really see much of that. Occasionally you saw it on shots between races when the start was held.
I think it was just dark. I think it was more.
They were putting a few stops in as well. It wasn't like they were running continuously to time. Maybe you see more of that from the TV side, but it felt to me like there were more breaks than normal in terms of
there were
start holds.
Yeah, there definitely were more holds, but I think the unsafeness in inverted commas of that race was to do with how dark it was. The snow conditions themselves, yes, a little bit soft, were really good. Like, they worked really hard. They put a load of salt in. The LOC did a great job getting everything underway and out of the thing. So I think they did really well and should be commended because, you know, their first World Cup ever. And I think it was a huge success. Very big crowds, really nice sounding crowds. They've got who are getting G'd up for everybody, no matter if they were first out the gate or last out the gate. I thought real credit to the Canadian ski racing fans. And I hope we go back. I hope we go back when it's... with slightly better snow conditions and weather conditions for next time. But I think all in all, big success, Tremblant. And I think hopefully we'll see that back on the calendar again. Standings, Gut Bahrami leads the standings in GS by 5 points over Brunoni. And then Schifrin is 105 points behind Gut Bahrami. Vlahova 114 points behind Gut Bahrami. And like I say, Goggia, not necessarily the GS hunt, but the overall hunt. Some very healthy GS points. Shaping up to be really, really good. Gut Bahrami, super consistent. Yeah, first day didn't go totally to plan. Second day, a little bit more like it. But, yeah, big success of a couple of days racing, don't you think? Anything else you want to add?
Oh, definitely a great success for the whole weekend as racing. Nothing really to add, although, once again, Paul of Moxham was pretty much the actual definition of everything we said about her ski racing on Sunday. First run, a bit all over the place, put it together on the second run, and I think she was like fourth fastest or something on the second run.
Yeah, with a massive mistake down the bottom as well.
I think she definitely would have had the fastest run. Obviously, she had the better of the conditions because she went pretty early on that second run, but she was flying. How she stayed upright, again, I'm not entirely sure.
I tell you who else was absolutely flying, Scheib. Julia Scheib on that second run, she was absolutely motoring and she was devastated and she was, I can see your eyes flickering as you're trying to scan down to where it was that she DNF'd and how quickly she was going at that point. But the Austrians, fairly packed out in the midfield, but not going towards Sharpen. But Scheib, if she can find that consistency, she will have been part of the front runners, I reckon.
Yeah, they looked a bit better on the second day, the Austrians, definitely than they did on the first day.
She was fifth up until she was fifth until she came out, which is, I know you got to finish it, yeah. But from bib 22 to be fifth at the second intermediate and really going some was impressive.
They've definitely got some speed in there. It's just one staying injury free and then actually getting all the way down consistently, which some people like the likes of Brignone, Shiffrin and Vlahova make look really easy. But as we know, judging by the rest of the mortals in the World Cup field, it's really not as easy as they make it look, being that good all the time.
Shall we move on, talk about what's happening this coming weekend? It's a busy old calendar from here on in. So busy, in fact, that they're struggling to work out where the men are going to get these missed races put in. They're potentially looking at one of the American races done in Wengen, but they're trying to see if they can squeeze an extra one into the calendar there. There's no space. Val Gardena is already taking on an extra one from Zermatt Cavigna. So currently, at the moment, FIS are trying to work out if they can make it an 8-day week or a 10-day week and fit in some of these missed races.
It still wouldn't work.
Yeah, exactly. But the men are in action this coming weekend, fingers crossed, in Val d'Isère. And it is the Saturday the 9th is GS, Sunday the 10th is slalom. The women are over in Samaritz. Fingers crossed again for some speed action. They are racing Super G downhill, Super G Friday, Saturday, Sunday over in Switzerland. Look forward to it, Ben. I know that you're a big Val d'Isère fan anyway.
I'm a big Val d'Isère fan. I thought you were going to go to Samaritz because I'm fairly sure I've had 3 years in a row of talking nothing but trash about how rubbish that hill is.
I know that you hate it. I actually quite like it, but I know you do not.
I think I just looked back at my notes from last year and I said, of the 1 minute 30 of the downhill, Lara Gubrami was in a tuck for it for 1 minute and 8 seconds. That was what I did last year. I took out a stopwatch and timed how long if the run was a tuck.
let's see if anyone can do the top to bottom. I reckon there will be one person, and it'll be somebody at the back. It would have been me tucking from top to bottom. I'm still going to go fast.
But yeah, I just don't like the lack of challenge on there. And I guess that's one of the things with downhill. It's harder to make it more interesting if the hill's not, you know, if you're not lucky enough to have a mountain shape like, you know, Kitzbühel or Wengen or Bormio or something, it's much harder than to have an exciting one. Whereas the Super G, at least they can play a lot more with what they do. Yeah.
The only thing is with Samaritz, I think there's a lot of terrain. So it has the ability to be really good, but it is at the mercy of the snow. So if the snow and the weather is bad and it's relatively slow, then it can be a little dull. But if the snow's good and the weather is good as well, then the speeds are high and it's actually really challenging because there's quite a lot of terrain. There's a lot of blind rollers in Samaritz.
Trying to think if it's Samaritz or somewhere else where they kind of go down into a dip and then have like a high swinging up right hand, I think. And we've seen people kind of get pushed and compressed out in the bottom of the dip.
That. You see that there. And then I think that was where Dorfmeister nearly, Mickey Dorfmeister nearly killed a course worker. That famous where they were skiing across and she broke onto the steep and she'd flip in nearly T-boned.
Took him out.
Going sideways.
Yeah, course workers, pay attention, please. That would be handy for today, for this weekend. But yeah, I will refrain from judging Samaritz until I've seen the skiing on it and the courses and those kind of things. But again, if we can just get some speed races away, it will be a good kickstart for the season. Obviously, it's not the men's, and they're in desperate need of races to start catching up with the women's tour for just how many races they've completed. But yeah, if we can have a full weekend of racing, it would be absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, we certainly haven't had one of those. Val d'Isère, actually, the long range forecast, as useful as that is in the mountains, is actually pretty decent. It says sun at the moment for Saturday, so I've got my fingers crossed. But it's a tough old place, that one. Mike Yannick was talking about it last week and saying how it is brutal. The Fastenbelvarde is an absolute brutal pitch. Whether you're on slalom skis, GS skis, super G skis, or downhill skis, or even recreational skis, that place is can bite you in the arse no matter what you're doing. But I'm really looking forward to it. It's one of those that is, you kind of watch it and try sort of through your hands, trying to figure out exactly how dangerous it's going to be or how gnarly the slope is going to be. So I'm really looking forward to it. GS is going off first. Ben, are you going to hit me up with some picks, or do you want to give me a little, your insight into it first?
It is exciting. That's one thing you'll say about Val d'Isère, and you see people, you know, incredible skiers struggling, and it makes them look more human, which is always nice. But you know, we talked from, I guess, the slalom side. Dave's talked about it a bunch of times. It's not his favourite place, but you know what? He had a really good first race out in Gurgel, as did Billy and Laurie Skin really well. So if they can all put down a performance akin to what we saw in Gurgel, obviously the conditions are going to be harder, but they seem to be on an absolute high right now, those boys. So yeah, really hope that they can put that in there.
Yeah, so come on then, hit me up. What are you thinking? Where are we going? What are you saying? Pick-wise, let's go.
I mean, if I'm going first, I'm jumping straight on the Odomat bandwagon then for the GS.
Odomat GS. I mean, and then I'm going to go the other Marco. I'm going to go Marco Schwarz. Because he already had the beating of that man at the opening GS that half happened, that didn't happen, that didn't really happen, but sort of happened, but didn't happen.
Well, interestingly, the last year's podium was Odomat, Fella and Kranjec, so doesn't feel like Val d'Isère would be a place that Manny Fella would podium in a GS. But
he's leading the overall standings. He's currently he's crushing all disciplines.
Big globe leader.
He's top of the tree. Right, slalom. Let's go. Let's keep this train rolling.
See, Noel's done me so bad over the years. I'm losing patience with him, but he did win here in 2021 as well, so it makes it even harder to pick now. So slalom, you pick someone consistent for the slalom. I might go Schwarz for the slalom, just because he's got the technique that will work on that hill if he gets it right, whereas some of the other guys are a bit more hit and miss.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with the red and white. I am going to go for Fella.
Oh, he's going for it. I was wondering if anyone would after his impressive first time.
Mate, he was so good. It's so good in Gurgel.
It's one of those things.
That... I know it's a different hill, but especially after hearing you say he went so well in GS. What was the podium in slalom then?
He was second in that as well. The slalom was Braaten, Fella and Maillard.
Who was it, sorry?
Braaten, Fella and Maillard.
Oh, well, Braaten's not there. So Fella, basically, that's Fella for the win. All right, done. That one's done and dusted. I'm quite happy with that one. So, yes, Ben, potentially onto the most boring women's speed race in your eyes.
In my eyes only, yeah.
So it is... interestingly, as you pointed out earlier, downhill Super G, no, Super G downhill Super G. So Friday, we start racing Friday, Super G first. And do you want to go straight in with the picks there, my son?
Yeah, I'm going to ride the hot hand and go Brignone for Super G one.
I did just look back at the results of this one from last season, and Schifrin won this Super G last year.
Did she?
She did. So, with that in mind, I'm going to go.
She's going to race.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to go with a big USA. I'm going to go with Schifrin to try to lay down a bit of a marker on Godju and go, hey, this not on my watch.
Makes sense. Go on, I'll keep going first, so you can go first with the doubt.
Right, I'm going to go.
You have who I think is the most likely
Godju.
Person.
Definitely going Godju for this one.
Now, before I make an idiot of myself, is Stu Hatch still racing this year, or did she retire?
No, she's still racing.
That's I'm doing Stu Hatch, and she's going.
All right, and then I'm going to go Goop Bahrami at the end of it. Final Super G.
Ooh, who do I want for the last one? This could be like my left field pick.
What about Cortoni?
I was thinking Cortoni. I was thinking possibly Hooter if she's fit, or Mo Winkle. Those were the three I'd narrowed it down to.
I like the idea of Mo Winkle, but her GS has been difficult.
Well, she'd skied okay before that whole wax thing in the opening race. She hadn't had a bad first run. Not amazing, but she is more of a Super G. I'd say we're probably more at her better end of the spectrum, but now you're scaring me a bit, so maybe I should go Cortoni.
Don't let me get in your head. No, none of the other listeners let me get in their head.
Too late. Yeah, but they don't have to deal with your knife. I was going to say we haven't picked any on the Austrians in the women since I picked Leansburg when she fell over. It's time for me to curse Hooter. So I'll go Cornelia Hooter.
She can be absolutely rapid.
She's got speed, and I feel like you said, obviously there's places you can definitely make mistakes and cost yourself the race there. But also, if it's not one of those challenging days, the people who do have that great glide will be, you know, in with a big chance.
I'm now wondering whether I've just done myself in and think that. I don't know whether neither of us would pick Godju for either Super G. Is that a bit mental?
She doesn't do as well at them. So she was only 11th in the standings last year.
Yeah, but she took half the year off after she nailed herself, didn't she? She won the downhill title by, I think, November. So.
Yeah, she was a fair way clear.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think she, and how well her technical skiing is going on those GS skis. I think it's going to be interesting. Do you know what, Ben? I think Samaritz is going to be a cracker, mate.
Who did you pick for the second Super G?
Eh?
Who did you pick? You said you weren't Godju for both.
Good Bahrami for the second one.
That's a good shout. She's rapid there as well.
Yeah.
Got the Swiss
time
snow.
The only thing about that is, you know, I'm overthinking this now, but I need to overthink it because I need to get back up the board. But that she's been busy racing. What do we say? There've been four GSs on the women's tour. So you know, racked up some miles. Come back straight into Samritz, and then she's got to do three races. Schifrin will be doing the same. Godju will be doing the same. Obviously, she wouldn't have done the slaloms over in Levy. So,
yeah, it's a case now of other people, you know, other people coming in fresh and rested at an advantage from the people who haven't been flying over to America and getting tired of races. Or is it the fact that people have got their, you know, they've had their skis on, they've been in the race environment, and they're now in full flow because it's still early season? They're not tired or drained by any of the exertions yet.
Well, I think for the women, racing is probably crucial. I think racing is a good thing for you. So going to all these races and actually getting to race is good. Whereas I think for the men, the reason that, like, one of the reasons I went with Fella is because he's done no traveling. He's not been out to Beaver Creek. He's not been out to Beaver Creek, gone powder skiing. He's been at home, hanging out with his family, training on some bulletproof piece somewhere that the Austrians have managed to send 100 course workers to, so Fella can do 10 runs of slalom over 4 days.
Oh, it's a good life, isn't it? But, you know, if it turns up being a powder slalom, then the people who went out and did powder skiing and
that's true.
got an advantage.
Yeah, man, it's all good. I can't wait. Hopefully we'll get a bumper weekend. 5 races on the schedule for this weekend. Let's see if they happen.
Five races. Five races.
The link is in the bio of the Instagram page to find your way into the picks and to get your picks registered nice and early. Those of you that wait until the training runs, you guys are squares, man. Just do it blind like we do. And we will see you next time. So from me and Ben, until next time, bye for now.